Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 151 of DM Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing okay, raring to go, and looking forward to dealing with some a pretty heavy issue today.
Yeah, it's the heaviest of issues.
Some might say the weight of the world's on your shoulders when we talk about this one.
I feel like I can't carry it around.
No, definitely not. Oof.
We're going to be talking about encumbrance later, guys.
Yeah, everything's fine.
Everything's fine. First, we've got some news, some really cool stuff to get through. And first off, no, the news is not the release schedule for D&D for the rest of the year. That is still not out. It is March 2nd as we record this.
Which means it'll be tomorrow.
Probably.
Or the next day.
It does make a ton of sense that it will get announced sometime this week.
Yeah.
To be fair, they've got a lot of new people. They got a lot of new people there. I'm sure they're getting all their ducks in a row. Maybe they'll do like a stealth drop in March sometime or something like that. But otherwise, maybe you just don't get anything for quarter one
I mean, we're going to be talking about a topic soon that even says specifically you're going to hear about the road what's coming out soon. So it'll be this week.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah. If history is anything to go by and we have 150 episodes of history, I would not bet against it.
Yeah. That's how that goes.
So first off, in reference to what Ben was talking about, they D&D Beyond team did have an AMA that they did just a few days ago. We're going to go through some of the highlights. To be honest, a lot of it is stuff we already knew. A big chunk of talking points were basically pointing towards the huge back-end rebuild that they mentioned and that they started on. And it will probably be ongoing through most of this year. It's apparently a Herculean undertaking because it is spaghetti right now. And so they talked about they are breaking it essentially into scalable microservices so that it will load faster. It will be more extendable. And they talked multiple times about how this is the thing that will enable more third-party stuff. It will enable a lot of the official rules that don't work right now to work, which is a big deal. I'm hoping it allows them to bring in systems like Bastions into the D&D Beyond website itself. That'd be super fun. They talked about fixing encounters, tool. 'Cause that's another one of those like vestige legacy things that needs a lot of love. And part of the whole backend rework will also help that.
Yeah, that was definitely part of it. Something that was mentioned in there too, that they're working on, you know, something along those lines. One of the things that they actually said a few times, you know, because based on some of these questions, people are asking for like, you know, pie in the sky features. And they said that first of all, like you said, and like we heard in the last AMA, is that they're working on this backend, you know, infrastructure that is going to make all these things possible. And when they're looking at features and everything right now, the analogy that they had is that they're trying to build a Honda Accord, not an F-16. So it's you know, kind of something small, something that works, something that's dependable. And then from there, they're able to build features on top of that. And one of the big,
but they want to keep it at that level for maps specifically. Yeah. They want to keep the Honda Accord level. Because there was, like, as you mentioned, there were a few very adamant people who were just like, I need my dynamic maps lighting, sir.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, this might not be the right one for you then.
Yeah. And they specifically said, hey, there's a lot of ETTs out there. And this, you know, find the one that works best for you. We're probably not going to be having that. We're not looking at adding that because, and again, a big key feature in this is a lot of what they're doing is they're trying to make it so that things are simple and easy to play D&D. Like that's the big goal of all the different features and everything that they're doing. And the fact that when looking at dynamic lighting and you know, systems similar to that, they always saw that it was much harder and, you know, a lot more prep time goes into building out those sort of things than just being able to, you know, throw the map together, throw icons in there, you know, just like simple things like that to just get in and play. Mm-hmm. And I really personally appreciate that aspect. One of the reasons why I never got into Roll20 is because it's like, oh, here's all these different systems and things that you need to do to make this fun. I'm like, no. And the same with like Fantasy Grounds and stuff like that. You know,
Foundry, especially.
Yeah. I made a map for
very
that.
Very powerful. But
that's what it was. It was Foundry. Yeah. I jumped into Foundry and kind of looked at this. I'm like, okay, I'm going to import a file from Dungeon Alchemist. And then from there, it's like, okay, cool. It has light. This is neat and everything. And then I'm like, oh, if I want to get my players in here, like they need to have this and all this other stuff. And if I want to have this happen, like, I'm just like, I'm going to Owlbear. We're doing that. It's super simple. It works. It is the closest thing to me doing a real map that I can. And then, you know, like I've talked about on the show, as soon as maps showed up on D&D Beyond, swapped to that. And I've never even looked back. It fits what I need. And when they add more features for me, it's like, wow, neat, something new, as opposed to simple, just like, yeah.
Simple can be good.
Yeah, exactly. It
simple can be good.
The mechanics don't get in the way of playing and storytelling. And that's the thing that I think matters most in situations like this. So I'm glad to be driving around in that Honda Accord instead of flying overhead in an F-16 that I have no idea how to operate.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. They also reaffirmed that, yes, homebrew will be improving. That will be part of the back end rework. They said they're going to be starting on monsters and magic items first. That's the high on their list because those are by far the most popular homebrews. One question I really liked is someone asked, can you name some specific pain points you want to eliminate? Which is kind of cool because gives kind of an idea of what they're looking for. So He said he asked the team to give a list of the top pain points. He got quite a list back. Here's a few things that are near impossible to implement today that will be possible with the rebuild. Monster or stat blocks that scale with your character level. For example, Draconic Spirit from the Summon Dragon spell or Sidekicks from Tasha's. Using hit dice as an expendable resource, like the durable feat. Giving magic items actions. Mm-hmm. For example, today you can't roll additional fire damage for a flame tongue weapon. Having conditions work in the character sheet, a lot of user experience based things, such as being able to expend a spell slot to recharge a feature, Aberrant Mind and Clockwork Souls level one feature from Tasha's, charms and blessings, content that meaningfully deviate from the D&D 5e core rules in a non-trivial way, minimum dice values, like with the Rogue's Reliable Talent feature, and wider Eldritch Invocation support, like being able to target spells that aren't Eldritch Blast with Agonizing Blast. List goes on. I'm stopping here to be keep it from becoming a novel. But yeah, it's a nice little list of just kind of examples of just like, this stuff just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it would be nice if it did.
And somewhere in there, and I'm 100% paraphrasing because I'm not going to dig through the whole AMA again, but someone's asking, like, you know, what about these bug fixes? Are they going to be in there and just stay forever? And they're like, no, with fixing the framework that we have, we'll be able to fix those bug fixes, which is a lot of the things that you kind of pointed out that don't work. So they know what's there. They see what's being addressed. And it's definitely something that is, you know, a priority for them going forward because they do want to have all that quality in there. There were a couple questions that were not 100% hostile, but not exactly 100% kind in their asking. And
you're being very generous.
Yes, that's because I'm trying to be kind, unlike them. But I will say that one of them asking, you know, is AI going to be used in any of this redo? And their response was, we're not replacing human developers with AI. We have great teams in place leading all of our efforts. And like that right there shows to me a lot of what they care most about is that, you know, community, putting things together, working together, and, you know, not just like open sourcing AI stuff is just fantastic. There was also another question about them, or somebody asked about having like an AI DM, and they're like, no, we're not doing anything like that. Like, again, they talked about community, about, you know, people playing together, and even mentioned that they're hoping that, you know, D&D Beyond might turn into a place where you can find groups and be able to play and everything. And, you know, that might be, you know, far in the future, but it's something that they would prefer instead of like creating and, you know, maintaining an AI DM, which I think is absolutely amazing. And I am very happy to support them to not use AI. So I think that's pretty great.
Yes. Good answer.
Yeah. One other thing too, I just want to throw out there. In those not nice questions, someone asked if the devs, if their team ever even reads the forums to know like bug fixes or bugs and everything that are reported. And they reassure that, yes, they do. And like this AMA and everything is more of their, effort towards transparency and towards communicating to really show that, hey, we're listening, we're working on these, we're trying to fix things. And it is definitely giving that feel of a turn towards, you know, consumer relations and, just, you know, listening to feedback and everything again. So it's a really good place and spot, with this AMA, with the last one that we talked about, a couple episodes ago. And, you know, it's giving me a lot of hope for these changes that, they're talking about and working on.
Yeah, I completely agree. We made mention of this, but just to read the actual thing, someone did ask, are there going to be any non-third party releases in 2026? And he did say, yes, the D&D studio will be announcing their content lineup soon.
Yeah.
So that's the answer. That's the straight up answer for that one. So it is coming. Oh, and if their announcement / transparency at the beginning of the year holds, we should be getting the Q2 third party releases article coming fairly soon too.
Yeah. 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 Looking forward to that. Also somewhere in there, I think that, and I'm totally kind of paraphrasing and I don't remember the full answer, but someone did ask if they were looking at more of a, like a DM's guild kind of feel to some things so that, you know, everybody can put content up there to buy. And if I remember correctly, I think that they were focusing more on keeping it third party, like published content, as opposed to, you know, just anybody can throw their things up there to buy.
They did seem to say it's going to stay more curated versus, cause like DM's guild's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Type thing.
Yeah. And you know what? I 100% agree with that.
I do too.
Because I mean, if you look at the Steam store, there's thousands upon thousands of games that are cheap ripoffs and fake and
junk.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's why Nintendo made the Nintendo Quality of Seal back in the 80s.
Yeah. And I mean, to be honest, once they finish their backend redo and especially start working on like the homebrew tools and stuff, get the monsters, the magic items, the subclasses, maybe even classes stuff done, mm-hmm. you will be able to port your favorite thing over to D&D Beyond for your personal use with far less trouble than it is now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's one of the things that's one of our pain points sometimes of, you know, third-party content not available on the platform, having to create it. If it's a full class, not even doable right now. Subclasses,
yeah,
sure, but yeah, full class, not so much. So,
and I mean, someone even asked specifically, are there any plans to feature more third-party classes? And they asked specifically about Mage Hand Press. And the answer was basically, it's in consideration. We need to be choosier with what new classes we support until we are further through our game platform rebuild.
Yeah.
Because obviously they've added a few classes, but I can say from experience of getting them, not all the features of the new classes third-party work. So that's just another one of those things. I totally get them holding off on that until they get their rebuild done more. And then they can, you know, the few quarters after that, maybe we get a deluge of cool, you know, new classes.
Yeah.
And such. So,
I mean, after all, you can't give anybody a ride in your Honda Accord until it has an engine.
It is true. There was one or two other really big ones. And the second one we'll use as a jumping off point.
Okay.
But the first one, someone asked, hey, I bought several D&D books in shops.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I have recently started using D&D Beyond. I love the app, but I was wondering if there's a way to add books to my account. And he said, not right now. However, we have a D&D Beyond coupon pilot program at a few local game stores right now with physical purchases. There are a lot of learnings and logistics the team has to figure out with this small trial before we announce or roll out anything more broadly. But that is super exciting, because I know having to buy things twice is a huge turnoff to some people.
Yes.
For completely legitimate reasons. Even if they're a little cheaper in digital, I totally get it. It sucks having to buy the same thing twice, especially if you're not getting like a big discounted rate or something because you're supporting your friendly local game store. I would be okay if they even kept the physical and digital combo thing to friendly local game stores. It might be a little easier to control that way. But yeah, it will be very, very interesting to see if they can make that work, but I hope they can, because I think that will make online far more accessible, and it will probably make people want to get more stuff online once they start getting some of their collection in there as well.
Yeah, I think
so. The more content you have, the easier it is to get stuck in
to
the online world. So,
oh yeah. Especially if you're using, you know, a newly made encounter or combat encounter, you know, tracker, or you need to use maps for whatever. And you know, that, I think that's pretty great. On top of that, I'm just remembering something else in there too. You know, we talked about ease of use of everything, but they're also trying to make sure that accessibility and everything works for people who aren't just playing online, for, you know, at the table, because there was an example that they used where like the DM uses like maps and, you know, the DM tracker or encounter track, whatever, everything like on a laptop behind the screen. He, for map purposes, he actually has a laptop on the other side of the DM screen for everybody to kind of use and move everybody around with and stuff. There's one person who uses, the D&D Beyond app. There's someone who uses D&D Beyond on just a browser on their, you know, tablet. And then there's someone who just prints out their paper. So they want to be able to have everything kind of integrate and work together no matter what level of engagement you're actually using with D&D Beyond or Dungeons and Dragons in general, just so that, again, it's a lot simpler. Everybody can jump in and play how it best fits for them.
And that's a great idea. It's a really good goal to move towards.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think we had talked about this before. They did mention again, they're not going to bring back a la carte.
Yes,
exactly as it was before. Checking 10,000 plus entitlements is starting to slow down the system. They are planning to offer smaller packages of gameplay in the future. These initial offerings will be geared towards newer players and players who don't have as much of a collection of character options.
Yeah.
So a la carte was really nice. It was. I totally understand the technical reasons not to have it. But if they can start offering cheaper, smaller things so that people can get like, I just want the monsters from this, or I want the character options from this or whatever, that will be a good thing. Yes. So I definitely support that. Finally, one of the biggest things that they announced and has since gone live, they announced that almost all of the remaining 2014 partner subclasses can now be played using the 2024 classes. This is a big freaking deal.
Yeah.
This is absolutely huge. Like, this was, I think I've talked about this before. Like, I can't upgrade one of my characters who is an Echo Knight to the 2024 fighter on D&D Beyond because I cannot select the subclass unless I painstakingly built it in homebrew for 2024. And so now they said almost all of them. So all the ones from the Book of Ebontides, the Grim Hollow player pack, the Humblewood campaign setting, Obajima, Tales from the Tall Grass, Explorer's Guide to Wildmount. There's your Echo Knight, your Chronergy. Yeah. And Graviturgy.
Stop making weird words.
The Tal'Dorei campaign setting Reborn, the Gunslinger. So all those things, you can now actually select the 2024 base class and then select those third-party subclasses. So this is huge deal. This was has been very requested since the site updated to the new edition. So
yeah,
very big deal.
They did a couple updates to some older stuff as well. For some, like the 2014 Player's Handbook, like the Circle Land subclass isn't split. From the Wayfinder's Guide to Eberron, the different Valinor elves are basically, you choose Valinor elf and then you choose either high elf or wood elf. Same with the RNE, I don't know if I'm saying that right, elf. And then lineages from Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft have actually been split into separate pieces and stuff. So they made things, you know, kind of fit better with what they're going for the 2024 rules.
And speaking of that, this was a big thing that happened literally just today. they actually announced, hello, we have a quick update on how 5th edition rules content is labeled on D&D Beyond. They are going forward. 2024 will now be labeled 5.5. 5e and 5.5e are clarity labels, not a new edition. To make it easier to understand which version of 5th edition rules you're using, D&D Beyond is updating its labels. All 2014 content will be labeled 5e. 2024 updated rules content will be labeled 5.5e. This is a clarity update only. No rules, purchases, or gameplay are changing. Both versions remain fully supported and compatible on D&D Beyond, and 5.5 remains fully backward compatible with 5e. They're making this change basically because they recognize that there's confusion when you refer to the year, which is 100% true,
yep.
Especially when you're browsing your library and building a character. The term has also been picked up by the community to refer to the updated rule set, so it was a natural course for the update. I think this is a very good change. As they said, a lot of people have been using 5.5 anyways. And we looked this up right before the thing, because I was not around, or I was not playing in 3rd edition. From the sound of things, obviously 3 to 3.5 was a very big update. But from the sound of things, there was a lot of, it was fairly backward compatible with 3rd edition, or at least very close. Or fairly easy to update. I don't know if it was, if 5 to 5.5 was quite the leap 3 to 3.5 was, but I totally understand it. And in my mind, at least, just calling it 5.5 makes a lot of sense, because it's just like, we updated 5th edition, made fixes, made tweaks, added some new stuff, but it's still within the 5th edition moniker, which means that it is still more or less compatible with all 5e content.
Yeah. which, you know what? Now we can all call it the same thing, and it'll just be easier for everybody. Yep. One other change that happened that I think is cool is that there's 3D dice on maps now, as well as the dice are shared all over the place, which I think is really cool. So if you're using maps and you want to use the 3D dice, you can just roll it right there. Everybody sees it roll. So now you can actually show off all of your really pretty cool, like, digital dice. Cool.
And it will be even better when the rework happens and you can set dice per character instead of having to change it site-wide.
Oh yeah, that'll be much better. But the cool thing is that right now they're shared across the system. So like if you roll on your character sheet, it'll show up on the maps as well. So I think that that's actually something that's pretty cool and fun. And then eventually they're going to have the mobile app work with it too. But one of the really fun things with that is that they are just giving some cool looking dice to everybody. So now everybody has in their 3D digital dice collection, the Rime of the Frost Maiden dice, the Battle for Beyond dice pack, Fuzzy dice, which are exactly what you think they are, the Dice of Healing, which are all potion bottles, and then the Bigsby's hand dice. So everybody has those available to you. So there you go. Yeah. Have fun with that.
They also, what Ben was reading that from, they also posted a brand new roadmap page. For those who have been around for a really long time, this is a little like a much nicer version of the like Trello board that back when Adam, Bad Eye Adam, was kind of running the show, and they had like the developmental roadmap, and they had the streams, you know, where they talked about it and showed off the Trello board roadmap. There is a dndbeyond.com/whatever the language is, EN for English/roadmap. And so they've got a link to the changelog where we read some of the stuff like the updates for 5.5, the new subclasses or the subclasses working now. So they've currently got their in active development, a new character quick builder, new navigation for the site, journals,
which is so cool.
Hopefully with a much better text editor than currently exists.
I hope so.
Rules assistant and game platform, which is obviously the big rebuild. And then they've also got a next, not yet in development, character builder 2.0, which is cool. Custom stickers and reveals, DM prep tools, and new player onboarding experience. So this is a great, it's nice to have. Hopefully they'll keep it updated, but it'll be nice to have so you can jump on and kind of see what is cooking currently for the site.
Exactly. And each little section is actually kind of labeled as to, you know, what section of the website there's going to be. Like the DM prep tools under maps. The character builder 2.0 is under character. I mean, that's kind of, yeah. But like D&D Beyond, just the player onboarding, just, you know, on the D&D Beyond website. It's a really cool, just kind of quick glance of like, oh, this is what they're working on. This is great. We know, you know, what to expect next from D&D Beyond and maps and everything that they're going through. This is great.
Yeah. Yep. Really, really good. Really, really good. Okay. So, A lot of news, a lot of cool stuff coming. This should be, in theory, a very exciting year for D&D Beyond especially. But, I mean, when they announce it this week, after, you know, we've done our podcast, hopefully for the actual, you know, D&D releases too.
I mean, but I now hope so. It's one of the it's pretty much the only reason we record the show is so that they'll have their announcements come out. You know, that's what it is.
Otherwise, they wouldn't happen.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure it's proven. Okay. Now let's move on to a subject with a little more weight. We're going to be talking about encumbrance. And Ben, I know this is something you've been wanting to talk about. We've had this on our list for quite some time.
Yeah, it's been so weighing on me.
Oh, God.
Okay. We should probably stop that. I mean, pound for pound, it's a pretty good topic to kind of discuss.
Well, let's let you kick it off then.
Okay. Well,
what is encumbrance and why should players and DMs care about it?
encumbrance is a horrible mechanic that some people want to use.
I mean, you're probably speaking for some people, I'm sure.
I'm speaking for myself in that, but no. So this was kind of brought up in our Discord. Some people were kind of talking about encumbrance, what they think, you know, how hard should they, you know, go for it and with it and everything. And essentially what encumbrance is, you know, if you've ever played Skyrim or any game that has you collect things and it actually tracks how much you can carry, it's similar to that. But, you know, in D&D language, it's, you know, how much crap can you carry with you before you just can't carry it anymore? You know, it there's actual rules about, you know, how much things weigh. If you look at all of your items in your backpack and stuff, it'll say, you know, how heavy it is. There's even a spot on your character sheet that'll, you know, kind of point out if you're encumbered or not. And on top of that, it can change based on your strength score and, you know, a bunch of stuff. And what this all comes down to is how realistic do you want your game to be? You know, there's going to be people who are going for, you know, real kind of ultra realistic. Okay, you can wear that armor. It's going to weigh you down, though. So you have to make decisions on what else you carry. When you go into a goblin camp and you loot everybody, you can't loot every piece of armor, every single sword, every single crossbow, everything that they have. On top of that, how much gold are you actually going to carry with you? Because gold is heavy. And if you're carrying 10,000 pieces of gold, you might not be able to make it that far. So, you know,
and if you are, how?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's when you start talking about, okay, well, is this am I going to be able to fit this in my bag? Can I physically carry it? You know, is it just strapped on the outside of my bag? Am I going to hide it in my bedroll? You know, like I said, it comes down to how detailed, how in depth, and how realistic you want your game to be. And then this is where certain items like a bag of holding are really, really important. If you're playing in a game where encumbrance is a thing, if you get a bag of holding, that's fantastic, because now you have a not endless void, but a much lighter thing that can carry all the crap you've been, you know, walking around with. Keep in mind, like bags of holding, portable holds, things like that, they do have a limit on what they can hold. So it's not just, you know, an infinite parallel dimension that stuff just goes into. So, you know, you still have your kind of realistic, well, fantastical limits there as well. But, you know, as well, I think I pretty much defined it. And there's a couple different ways that we can kind of go through and talk about this. One way is, you know, don't care about it at all. Like me, personally, I gave my players access to bags of holding pretty fast in the campaign because I didn't care about encumbrance. I didn't think it was something that mattered. I personally don't enjoy it because to me, the point of the game is to go on adventures and have fun, you know, telling stories with your friends. I personally don't want to be like, oh my gosh. And then we walked into the goblin camp and unfortunately, I was 10 miles behind because I was dragging this giant bag and could barely move. You know, that's not fun. you know, but that's just me. And, you know, it's one way of playing. It's one way of going with it. At one point, I did have to say, okay, you guys are carrying a lot of stuff in your bag of holding. There are limits to it. We should probably try to get rid of some of this stuff. You know, just... And it's just like random stuff that they found. We joke that there's an entire wagon in one of my players' bags just because she bought a wagon repair kit and it just said wagon on D&D Beyond. So we're like, oh my gosh, you have a wagon there. But anyways, seriously though, it's just one of those things where I personally don't find it fun. But conversely, depending on the type of game that you're playing, it can be an added mechanic where things start getting kind of tricky. It could be, you know, added tension. It could be, you know, added strategy involved in that. You know, as a really great example, if you look at the difference between like Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil 2, if I remember correctly, you just have a whole bunch of stuff or throw things in a trunk and then have access to it all the time. Resident Evil 4 had basically a case where you had to physically put things in and turn them and have them to be the right shape so things will fit in. And it added a sense of you know, danger, of choice, and of strategy to your level of gameplay, because you needed to choose, oh, I have this rocket launcher. I don't have any rockets left. But if I find some, I want to be able to use this again because it's super powerful. But in order to do that, I can't carry these herbs that'll heal me in case I get hurt. You know, you have to make those decisions in how you're kind of going with it on the fly. And depending on how your game is set, that could be that extra level of danger or of strategy that you want in the game. Like, I would think that playing something like, you know, a Ravenloft campaign, having encumbrance would add an extra layer of danger to something that's already more dangerous, you know, giving it more of a survival aspect to it. It's why, you know, yeah, I can say I'm carrying 10,000 arrows, or, you know, be the kind of game where you have to actually track how many arrows you're carrying with you, because the weight actually matters. So it adds, you know, strategy, it adds gameplay, or it adds a completely unnecessary mechanic based on how you want to run your game.
Yeah, no, I think you covered it really, really well. I personally run I only care about weight when it matters.
Yeah.
Like when it really matters type game. I'm definitely the type of DM who will give early, easy-ish access to a bag of holding. It's really nice that that item exists, because that's your out if you really don't want to care too much about encumbrance, right? Obviously, there are certain things that matter. Like a dragon horde, right? You kill a dragon. Okay, I'm not just going to give you everything.
Yeah, like, exactly. Or you're going to spend years filling up your bag.
Yeah, be creative in ways that you get stuff out, or maybe you can only take the coolest stuff, or you can only take a portion of it. Maybe you have to come back later. Those can be interesting game decisions, like Ben was saying, from a mechanical standpoint. One thing too is that when you totally ignore encumbrance, it does negate a certain amount of creativity, and it also negates a certain amount of in-game mechanics, such as spells. Mm-hmm. There are spells that are built for dealing with encumbrance. Like there's little pocket dimension things. There is the, I think it's like Tensor's disc.
Floating disc, yeah.
Floating disc, yeah. Which can carry several hundred pounds. If you're not really worrying about encumbrance, that spell is basically worthless. But if you need to be able to move a heavy object, then that could be very, very useful.
And there's different levels of encumbrance as well. Like I said, there's loot, you know, gold levels, items, things like that, versus I want to take the dragon's head to town. You know, like something like that, that'd be like, okay, we're going to figure out how to do this. You're not just going to be able to throw it right in the bag, but you know, bag of holding, it has an opening, only, you know, yay big. So there are going to be limits in there, but yeah, you know, you're right. It can be limiting in some instances, but you know, if you look at it that way, if my players don't need Tensor's floating disc, then what other utility spell can they choose instead? So it opens up doorways both ways, as well as closing other ones.
Yeah. I like all things, I think there's a happy medium.
Yeah, definitely.
And you mentioned it a little bit. It depends on how hardcore you're being, mm-hmm. right? If you're doing like a serious dungeon crawl type survival campaign, I would track encumbrance pretty closely.
Yes.
Honestly, because you can only carry what you can carry, and yeah. You've got very limited resources, and you have to pick and choose. I think encumbrance works really well for that style of game.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree.
But yeah, for like a more streamlined maybe like a city game, or, you know, there's that it matters a lot less because there are a lot more solutions. Even if you don't like RP it out, like, oh, I'm in a place big enough, I can hire something to come carry this and bring it to another location. Mm-hmm. Right. That is something. Oh yes. You just have access to that. You pay a certain amount of money, hand wave it. Right. Yeah. So it really just depends on your setting and your location in a lot of ways. Like, I might be a little more strict if you're in the middle of a forest somewhere, or you don't have easy access to civilization, right? Versus we can just travel for an hour to go hire somebody at the town to come back and grab this.
Yeah.
That's a lot less big of a deal. So, yeah. And then there's certain things like, I know we're talking encumbrance. I think a good example is like spell components. For the most part, I don't necessarily track spell components. Obviously, you can have a focus that will kind of do the same thing. A lot of spell components are for flavor. The only ones I actually care about are the ones that have any significant monetary value.
Yeah, or that, right? When the spell is cast.
Used up, exactly. And usually even with those, if it's not something that's like, this thing is 100 gold, or this thing is 500 gold, I usually just make them pay the cost of it and they can find it somewhere fairly easily. Until you start getting up into the higher things, then it's like, okay, you have to actually actively seek this out.
Yeah.
Right. And then pay for it, like diamonds, mm-hmm, for Revivify, right? Those aren't lying around everywhere normally. So I make the characters actively seek that out.
Unless you're in Diamond Town. I mean, then they just litter the streets. But, you know, that's a rare place to find. It's very specific. It moves on the map. You know, it's hard to find.
It's so funny. We had this conversation during my game before of, you know, because it's several spells specify like this thing, something worth this much.
Yeah, like 300, like 300 gold worth of diamond dust.
If I just go up to somebody and say, hey, can you charge me 150 gold for that tiny diamond? And they go, sure. Is that now worth that tiny diamond now worth 150 gold? Is that like, does that break the godly social contract for spell components? is inflation a thing? Like what if the big diamonds start costing a lot more? Does the spell price inflate with the market for diamonds, or is it a static thing? It's really funny to think about, and obviously try not to think about it too hard, but it is a really funny conversation to have.
Yeah, and what if you cast Distort Value first and then try to use the diamond? Would that matter at all? I mean, who knows?
Are you cheating?
I guess it could. Well, here's the thing. If it depends on what you're using with. And of course, Distort Value is only it's from Acquisitions Incorporated, but it's still in D&D Beyond, so it can be a lot of fun to play around with. So, you know, if you're using Distort Value and you're using it to raise someone, depending on the god, they might think that that's really clever and let you do it. Maybe not. You know, it all depends. But yeah,
it's a funny concept. It's just like a thought puzzle. Just really, really kind of funny to think about. That not necessarily something you really have to care about.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny that you bring this up because in campaign one for a Critical Role, they started using Hero's Feast all the time. And one of the components of that is a jewel dish that's, I think it's like 5,000 gold or something like that. And it got to the point where Matt had to say, these things don't grow on trees. You know, you're not going to find one in every town, every city. And, you know, you can't have like three or four of them on you. So that's when using kind of strategy and everything kind of comes into play. You know, if for something super expensive like that, that is used up in the casting, you know, it's the whole, I'm going to jump back to Resident Evil. It's the whole Magnum ammunition conundrum. It's like you have this thing that you want to use because it's, you know, a great buff or powerful thing. When do you use it? Which, I mean, we can have an entire other conversation about this, talking about spell slots, about, you know, unique items and things like that on when to use them, you know, and it adds a bit of strategy. But if you're like me, where you're like, I want to use it at the best time and it's never going to be the best time, you know, you lose some fun gameplay in that instance.
Yeah. Yeah. We can definitely talk about that sometime. That is consumables is a great conversation.
Yeah, I think so.
For sure. But we will save that.
Yes.
For another episode. But do you have any thoughts on encumbrance? We'd love to hear them. Do you use it in your game? How strict are you with your encumbrance rules? Do you have any unique ways you use the encumbrance mechanics? We would love to know. So please let us know on Blue Sky or email or Discord.
Yeah, especially if you use it. And, you know, how strict are you with everything? It's as someone who really doesn't use it a whole lot, it is interesting to me to hear about games where it is kind of a big deal.
Yeah. All right. So before we jump into what we've been doing, I did want to have one community shout out real fast. We obviously like to talk about D&D a lot, but we also like to talk about other tabletop RPGs whenever we get the chance. One fairly big one is having a Kickstarter that is going on right now. Mutants and Masterminds 4th Edition is currently on Kickstarter. It's got a few days left from when this episode drops, so you still have time. There might even be, you know, late pledges. I'm not exactly sure at this point. But it is one of the few premier superhero RPGs. It is one I have backed because I've been wanting to try and play a superhero RPG for quite some time because it's just a very, it's a fun fantasy. It's a really, really fun fantasy to have the superheroic powers we all know are, you know, Superman's, Batman's, Wonder Woman's, Iron Man's, Spider-Man's, Thor's, all these really cool characters, and being able to make one and design one for yourself has always been very fun and intriguing for me. Especially I love the concept of like the duality of play where you have the secret identity potentially, and you're kind of doing that in addition to your superheroing stuff. So I really like the concept. It's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. New editions are a great time to jump in. They've usually streamlined things. They've usually made things easier to learn. And obviously there's lots of content to update as well. And this one has been going for quite some time, I believe 20 plus years on Mutants and Masterminds. So we will have the link to the Kickstarter in our show notes at dndiscussions.com if that's something you want to check out.
Yeah, I've always been interested in playing a, you know, some sort of superhero game. And in fact, I think the best way that I can describe it is the first time the idea of role-playing and like, it wasn't even a TTRPG, but the first time of ever kind of role-playing was in a situation where I was like 6 and someone's like, hey, you want to play superheroes or whatever? And he was essentially kind of DM'd things. And I was Ghost Rider, a hero I knew nothing about. And we played for like 20 minutes before he kind of gave up because he didn't know what he was doing. So, you know, ever since then, that awoke my role play idea. like the challenge I had was as Ghost Rider, my motorcycle did not have any gasoline and I had to take it to the gas station to get gas. And that's as far as we got. But
it's a little strange.
Yeah, I thought so. I'm like, do you mind a Hellfire bike? I don't think it's going to run out of gas, but you know, whatever.
Runs on the souls of the damned.
I mean, you'd think so, but no, this one ran on gas. Anyways, but yeah, so like ever since then, I'm like, you know, being a superhero would be cool. I read a lot of comics and I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. So, you know, being able to just kind of go in, have powers and problem solve with them and stuff, I think it'd be really cool. So, yeah.
Yeah. And there's not a lot. There's not a ton of superhero RPGs out there. You've got the Marvel Multiverse one, which I would almost say it's a bit more like a board game skirmish game, like RPG light type game rather than a full on TTRPG, based on what I've played of it and what I've talked to other people on. Mutants and Masterminds is obviously a very big one. I believe the Kids on Bikes has a superhero version as well. And I think there might be one or two other ones, but it's not a very big pool.
Yeah.
Not a very big pool of like big superhero RPGs. So I'm excited to try. I'm really excited to try it, especially with it being a new edition and kind of jumping in at the beginning of it.
Well, if you ever run a one shot and you want someone who doesn't live near you at all, let me know.
Yeah, you can certainly bet that I will.
Yay. I'll look for some spandex.
All right. And with that, obviously, one of the last things we usually like to do is talk a little bit about what we've been doing in our own games. Ben, have you gotten to play yet at all since we last talked?
No, I'm...
Oh, like, fiddlesticks.
To be 100% honest, I'm having a really hard, like, motivating problem of... I'm suffering burnout, and... I need to get back into it because I need that creative outlet. And I've been thinking a whole lot, and I even am like, I've got a lot of ideas and stuff floating. I just need to get to the point where
nail it down,
putting it into like writing and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's
totally get it. That. Totally been there.
Yeah.
Totally been
but
there.
But soonish, I hope, because I have a story.
I hope so too. I want to find out what happens.
Yeah, me too.
I enjoy hearing about it too.
Yeah. Well, how about you though? Because you're being active and not 100% burned out. So what's going on with your game?
Oh boy, howdy am I.
I know there's so much going on that I'm actually really excited to hear about this.
This was a very special session. Honestly, at the end of the last session, I think I talked a little bit about it. They had found their deceased companion's little sensor that they put the memories in. And he had written a riddle up for them to solve with certain incenses. So they ended up solving the riddle. They went and bought the different types of incenses for each and lit them and said the password, which in this case was Mistra. That was the answer to the riddle. Smoke, you know, started going and then burst out and then encompassed the three player characters. And then I turned on some very sad music and I turned it over to our other player, who's been playing, you know, his new character. And he and all the characters are aware of how the mechanics of this work. It basically replays memories from the point of view of the character that, you know, quote unquote, recorded them. So I handed it over to him. And he has been working the last like 6-ish weeks or more on writing out kind of a goodbye for each of the player characters. So he had basically written a small short story that he then started reading. It was a memory his character had done and then taken out and put in the container after the last time in a big fight, they'd almost died. And so the cool part was the perspective, because you see the memory from the memory maker's point of view. And so his character started by looking into a mirror so that the person could see the character. And then he talked to the first player directly and talked about backstory and, you know, sorry for not being able to do certain things. And then started going on a walk, and it transitioned to the second character, where his character stopped and looked in a window so he could see the reflection and talk to the second character's character and about, you know, the interactions that they had had and, you know, the things that they hoped to see from them and that they were sorry about, and then continued walking to this park and eventually sat down in front of this little pond and looked down into the pond, see the reflection, and talked to the third character about how they were kind of the moral compass and the clarity, and they were really proud of them, and that would hoped they would hold on to their compassion and moral compass. And so it was a really, really tearjerker. He did such an amazing job, and kind of coupled with the mood music, and it was just a very, very good experience. And I love that he took so much time to do what he did. And it was a wonderfully fitting kind of closure for that player character. So I'm really, really happy with how the session turned out. We ended up, I mean, we did some more for that session. We did some mini downtime, where the characters kind of dealt with the after effects of that. They all have their own lives, so they, you know, checked in on things that they needed to, and then started figuring out what they were going to do next. And so next session, we're going to have a slightly longer period of downtime where certain things that the characters have been wanting to do can get done, because it's just been such a roller coaster, such, you know, one thing after another thing after another thing, just all this big stuff. And now, at least for the moment, they might get a little bit of a rest. So it was wonderful. It was one of those session, like, core memory sessions. Like, I won't forget it. It was wonderfully well done, and it's cool to talk about, but it was definitely one of those you had to be there.
Yeah. No, I wasn't there, but that is amazing. That memory, like censure, is a fantastic thing that needs to be 100% like actually in Dungeons and Dragons. That's amazing. I'm totally stealing that. And I think it adds so much to players. It adds so much for the DM, because especially if it's a known thing in the world, using that to help bridge and give story is really great. But having it as a way to send off and kind of, you know, take the place of, oh, I wrote this letter in had it in my jacket pocket or something, and giving the player the chance to kind of walk through that is a fantastic thing that I'm like, my heart is welling up a little bit because of just that beautiful moment that I didn't even experience. That's very cool.
It's if you want to use it for yourselves, we basically took the cantrip in Code Thoughts from Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica, and essentially kind of themed it as you basically take a memory, because it actually says, you know, you putting a finger to your head, you pull a memory, an idea or message from your mind, transform it into a tangible string of glowing energy called a thought strand, which persists for the duration or until you cast a spell again. Strand appears in an unoccupied space within, you know, 5 feet of you, blah, blah, blah. If you cast a spell, concentrate on a spell or an ability that allows you to read or manipulate thoughts of others, you can transform thoughts or memories you read rather than your own into a thought strand, blah, blah, blah. So essentially what we did was we took that and we kind of themed that as the player took out a memory, and then what his character had was a journal that basically wrote down kind of a summary of it. Because once you take a memory out, we themed it as it goes away after an hour from your head. Yeah. Like it fades because it is now there. So they would basically pull the memory out, write down a note about it, put it in there. We called it the Turibulum Memore. That is the sensor. And you stored the memories in there. And then when you wanted to go back, they would look in their journal, find kind of what they wanted to see, light the incense, and basically reactivate that memory. But then they could, you know, walk around it and see it in kind of like that 3D hollow view type thing as it plays out. For recall, maybe I missed something. The character was very Sherlock Holmes coded. Mm-hmm. And so it really worked out well as kind of an extension of that theme. And it was wonderful. It was super cool. And I'm really, really glad we made it.
Yeah. That's very cool.
Character player DM collaboration for sure.
Yeah. I applaud it. That's a really good idea.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see what happens next, where they go. I said this was like one of the very few times a character in one of my campaigns has fully died without really any way to get them back. So it's always really hard, but it was good. Okay. Very well done. It was good. All right. So with that, that takes us to the end of our episode. As always, Ben, thank you so much for being here with me. It's always fun to talk about tabletop RPGs and D&D with you. And if anybody else would like to talk about this kind of stuff with us, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
Yeah, of course. As Ryan mentioned earlier in the show, you can always send us an email. Send those to dndiscussions@gmail.com. We read everything, love everything that you guys send to us. Love to hear your stories. It's one way to get to us privately where you don't have to worry about anybody else, listening in on your story, even though, I mean, D&D players, TTRPG players, we'd love to share our stories to anybody who will listen. So if you're one of those, definitely reach out to us on our Discord channel. Or server. And you can find a link to that on dndiscussions.com. We have a great community, tons of fun people. The DN discussions are flying all over the place. People sharing their campaign stories, one-shot stories, asking for advice, getting opinions on rulings and stuff. So, I mean, it's a really great place. I always recommend it. But also on dndiscussions.com, you can find links to our Blue Sky accounts. If you're looking to follow us on social media, that's the only ones we use. So check out the show. It's DN Discussions. If you're looking for Ryan, he is TBK Zord. And if you're looking for me, I am Ben Bumhoffer. If you are, just itching to hear me talk more, but in a context of playing a game, you can always listen to Plus Five to Hit. It is an actual play podcast where we're running around a homebrew world and adventuring and having a good time. So definitely recommend that. We have a lot of fun with it. But yeah, this show, DN Discussions, like I said, dndiscussions.com. You can find a link to pretty much everything there, except for the email. There's not an email link, but just dndiscussions@gmail.com, like I said before. That being said, though, Ryan, I appreciate the fact that we took the time to really carry that encumbrance topic, handled it carefully, pivoted where we needed to, and got it up that flight of stairs to the end of the show. So I appreciate your help with that. And of course, I always love talking to you, and I appreciate having you around. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Okay. I had to throw one.
It was hard. It was hard for me to do.
Yeah. I mean,
I'll do it. I'll put up with it for you.
I think we both did some heavy lifting with that topic.
God.
Anyways, everybody else listening, thank you very much. Thank you for putting up with my stupid puns. But even more so, thank you very much for your support. We love every one of you. You know, times can be tough. Times can be good. When the times are tough, remember you're loved. You have people in your life who love you. And until next time, everybody, roll high and be good to each other.
Take care. And we'll see you soon.